flamingos in a fruit fight. Every color of day, twirling around at night.
Celebrated the true arrival of spring. So, of course, the next afternoon, we had 6 inches of snow. I thought it was March that was supposed to go in like a lion and out like a lamb. Did global warming suddenly push that to April? I mean, I could understand on April Fool's Day getting a tornado or something, but a week into the month, we shouldn't be getting New Hampshire weather. And this one was a pain, because unlike a lot of the other storms during the season, the time was not on people's sides. The one good thing about that humongous snowfall a few weeks back is that it started precipitating Sunday evening, and the next day, when nearly 2 feet came down, it happened to be a national holiday. And other times, the storm started late at night or on a weekend, so commuters and people driving could wake up in the morning and make a cogent decision about their plans. Ah, there's 3 inches on the ground already, I'll work from home today. Or, well, I can't work from home, but I'll allow extra time to get to the office and leave early if it doesn't stop. But this time, we were warned of the storm. The weathermen weren't zooming us. But you woke up on Monday morning, a typical work day, and the skies were empty. A bit gloomy, but no high-pressure activity, as Tex Antoine would say. And then, 10 o'clock in the morning, the flakes began. And it just got heavier and heavier until by lunchtime it was a bona fide snowstorm. So, of course, Mayor Bloomberg gets on the air with a 20-minute press conference. But really, what was there to say? Hey, everybody, it's snowing. Drive carefully. Be prepared for delays on the roads and rails. I mean, it's one thing for the mayor to take charge in a crisis or prepare everyone for a blizzard like we had in February. But a few inches of snow that you knew would melt in 72 hours because, well, it's April! Did it really require a question and answer session with a room of David Bloom wannabes? At the same time, it was kind of funny that except for that press conference and the morning weathermen getting even more FaceTime than usual, the networks played it pretty low-key, which only goes to show it's all in the timing. Had this been the first snowstorm of the season, all three networks, Fox and UPN, would have gone live from the first flake to the last. This reporter live in Bergen County, that reporter live on 14th Street, another journalist reporting from a hardware store where, heavens, shovels and bags of ice melt are selling really well. But nothing gets old faster than novelty. And comparing this past week's dandruff to the blizzard of 03 is like comparing a guppy to a beluga. So the TV stations were like, yawn, call us if there's a bridge collapse. And I wouldn't think anything of it, except that's pretty much the way they're handling the war in Iraq. As soon as the thing started, the networks plunged head, feet, toes, knees, nipples into the conflict. It wasn't enough to show live pictures from the Iraqi border. There had to be picture in picture, with Basra in one frame, the reporter standing next to a tank in another. And then they put the anchor on from Washington, so you have three images. And underneath, the ubiquitous news crawl that everyone stole from the cable news channels. And all this, plus the station logo in the right-hand corner. No wonder people don't read newspapers anymore. Looking at the TV screen is already like scanning the front page of USA Today. So there's all this going on. ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, UPN, WB11, the Spanish channels. Every station, except, oddly enough, Channel 13. Evidently, the folks at public television figured what was going on in the Middle East had basically nothing to do with the public. And this went on for nearly a week, 24-7. All primetime programming preempted, the children's shows postponed, no angle of the conflict went uncovered. Any hint of story was relayed and poured over like a precious manuscript. And the big surprise of the shock and awe campaign was that the first strikes seems so anticlimactic. Remember, on the first day, one or two missiles knocked out a building, and that was it. And you could feel the palpable disappointment from the networks that they didn't get a sound and light show a la IMAX, or Dimax. And you could feel their relief 3 days later when the bombs started dropping in earnest. So all these pretty fires and ominous plumes of black smoke created these camera-ready tableaux. And like any good war, the real stories did start coming, from major strikes to setbacks to suffering POWs to a rescued hostage. How about that Jessica Lynch, huh? Soon as she heals up, she will be set for life. Every women's magazine, every book publisher, NBC has already announced plans for a TV movie. I just hope that she has shell shock and terrible physical side effects, so the movie has a second act, you know? I mean, rescue is dramatic and all, but long, slow recovery, that's the stuff of movie of the week. And how lucky for the media that Jessica was this cute little corn-fed white girl, huh? Imagine if Jessica Lynch were an overweight Latina with bad skin. You think she would make the cover of every daily newspaper? I mean, there'd be a headline, POW Rescued, story on page 23. And you just know the movie makers are thrilled that they can cast Reese Witherspoon or Kirsten Dunst as Jessica and not, you know, Kim Fields or Heather Matarazzo. But anyway, the war just kept bringing the goodies, from footage of Saddam Hussein's double to raiding the guy's palaces and messing up his personal bathroom. And yet, after the first week, already television was back on its regular roster. Breaks were taken here and there, but the soap operas, morning talk shows, late-night programs, college basketball games, back to business as usual. Already, they were worried that viewers were saturated with Iraq talk that they created. They figured, unless a bomb actually dropped in front of the camera, how much is there really to see? If people want round-the-clock awe and shock, they've got the cable news channels. But the major networks were already back to wondering, will celebrity mole Hawaii beat the Amazing Race? Which I think teaches a great lesson to anyone staging anything for media consumption. Make a big splash in the beginning, because you will get so much coverage, you won't be able to turn your head without bumping your chin into a Sennheiser. And then wait 2 weeks, just go about your business. After 14 to 17 days, everyone is so bored with the relentless coverage, whether there's anything new or not, that you can start getting away with stuff. That's the time to start letting through all the negative news and make all the sleazy deals behind the scenes, because no one's going to be paying attention to all the little stuff anymore. It's like the Iranian hostage crisis, oh, so many years ago. First couple of weeks, the networks all but kept a sand dial by their consoles. By the time half a year rolled around, the news anchors were like, day 206 of the hostage crisis, and another protest outside the Shah's former palace, with devout Muslims burning American and Israeli flags. In other news, is your baby stroller really as safe as the manufacturer says it is? Stay tuned and find out! By the time the hostages were released, a year and a half older, the networks were like, Ronald Reagan takes the oath of office, and oh, here come those pesky rugrats from the last administration. Guess we'll have to interview them all when their books come out. So it's going to get interesting when this war's over, or more over than it is now, and we're just keeping the peace, coping with snipers and the occasional bomb in a handbag, which won't even make the first news segment because we're all too preoccupied with a growing SARS death count. Well, maybe not. SARS might be old news by then. Not cured, mind you, just old news. Because, you know, once you get past the 1,000th victim, you have to hit 100,000 before it's good for page one again. That's why, if, right now, if you're listening, if you happen to have a new disease that you're just itching to try out on the public, wait a few more weeks. Let the SARS thing play itself out, just like anthrax and smallpox did. Even if people are still dying by double digits, the papers will be tired of it, so that's the time to make your move. Don't make the mistake the gays did with AIDS. How dumb do you have to be to come up with an illness that wipes out homosexuals and Haitian immigrants smack in the middle of a right-wing Republican administration? Of course it turned into a plague. What was a bunch of dead fags and cab drivers to Mr. and Mrs. Bonzo? So for God's sakes, while we still have Bush and the corporados in power, no special ethnic maladies. Nothing that hits Mexicans or West Africans or anything like that. They'll all be wiped out. We need a good Christian disease. Preferably, one that attacks children just before they're old enough to receive communion. Fox Network is already doing up a dummy promo and all these really cool logos, like the medical caduceus crossed with a crucifix, the two snakes forming the word deadly, or a fast animation of SpongeBob turning from bright yellow to gray while Dr. Sandy shakes her head and cries in her fishbowl. The merchandising possibilities are endless, but remember, you only have a few weeks before the public loses interest. Well, happily, we've had 28 weeks here on WGBB, and that hasn't happened. Maybe because no one was listening in the first place, but I like to think it's because Dave's Gone By is a show like no other. A unique mix of humor, music, serious talk, silly talk, interviews, and interstitial material, all held together by one man, Dave, or as I like to call me, me, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, songwriter, humorist, and columnist, bringing you an hour of off-the-wall radio every week, Sunday nights at 8 p.m., here on WGBB AM 1240, and live streaming on the internet at WGBB.com. On our show tonight, of course, we have The News Gone By, our weekly site swipe at current events. In our cultural segment, ever so cleverly named Dave's Gone Cultural, we're going to say goodbye to Egg. More on that later. And this being Passover week, speaking of eggs, we couldn't let that go by without a visit from our favorite guest, that titan of Talmud, that rabbinical pinnacle, that fountain of faith, Rabbi Saul Solomon, leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. He'll give us the whole lowdown on the Passover holiday, so if you think your herbs are bitter now, just wait till he gets through with them. So stick with us on this edition of Dave's Gone By, titled Why Is This Night? And as we celebrate the toppling of one Arab dictator, we look back at the well-deserved drowning of another. Sunday nights at 7, it's a new spin on old-fashioned radio when Don Lewis hosts Entertainment Long Island. It's an hour of interviews and advice about how to get started as a performer, be it as a career or a hobby. Every show has nostalgia, humor, and live music by Eddie Hug and the boys, so catch the corny jokes and talented folks on Entertainment Long Island right before Dave's Gone By. It all starts Sunday night at 7 on WGBB because the stage is a world of entertainment. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's 8:17 p.m. or thereabouts. Whatever time it is time for The News Gone By, a look at events of the past week from a regime-toppling perspective. In war news, we won. In other war news, now what? Okay, so America kicked some ass this week. Say what you will about the war, about President Bush, about the motives for American interest in Iraq, we skunked them. We came, we saw, we pushed buttons with accuracy, and we conquered. Hooray for the generals, hooray for the troops, hooray for any soldier who can tell the difference between a terrified Iraqi civilian and a terrified Iraqi terrorist, and soldiers who can tell the two apart will be much valued in the weeks to come, because as the major fighting in the war comes to a quick finish, keeping the peace will be the real endgame. As for who will rule Iraq in the years to come, the Bush administration has made clear that it wants a forward-thinking, democratic government modeled directly after ours. It's a reasonable goal, but it does have one flaw. There's no plan B for when the system doesn't work, when general elections and checks and balances fall apart. Thank goodness John Ashcroft is already taking care of that, and as we speak, he is creating an Iraqi Supreme Court which can circumvent due process and elect its own president, just like ours. The good news is that unlike politicians in this country, the future leaders of Iraq won't have to bow and scrape to captains of the oil industry. The bad news is that they'll all be captains of the oil industry. And as for the United Nations' place in a rebuilt Iraq, well, that is secure. They can be first in line at every new Exxon pump. But sorry, no self-service. In medical news, you've heard of Typhoid Mary. Now there's Respiratory Esther. Esther Mock, a 26-year-old woman vacationing in Hong Kong, came back to her hometown in Singapore and promptly spread the SARS virus to 100 people there. She's still alive, but her parents and her priest both succumbed to the respiratory ailment. Health officials have dubbed Esther Mock a, quote, super spreader, because two other Singapore women also contracted the illness and died, but they didn't give it to anyone else. Singapore Health Minister Lin Hung Kiong said in a recent press conference, "Esther Mock infected the whole lot of us." I'm not kidding, that's a real quote. However, mocking it may be, the ministry's director of disease control added, "We don't know why some people are able to spread it so easily and some don't." Asked if he himself had ever encountered a super spreader, the director said, "You bet, that's why I married her." Yes, that's the comedy bell signaling the bad pun of the week, which is brought to you as a public nervous by Dave's Gone By. If you want to sponsor our bad pun of the week, and we always have at least one every 5 minutes, contact us at 516-295-1511 or by email at davesgoneby@aol.com. Connect your product or business to a piece of English phrasing that will make people nauseous and appalled, but memorably so. Just imagine all these people in your town, in your district, saying something like, "Hey, you know that joke I heard on the radio last night about the woman who coughed on her family and caused all these horrible deaths and stuff? Jimmy's Hardware sponsored that! Yeah, Jimmy on Franklin Avenue! Let's go there and buy a wrench!" Folks, it's that simple, and the rates are dirt cheap. So, if you want to show off your company or service in the best possible light to all the listeners of this radio and internet program, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com and sponsor the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week. Don't be good, be punderful. In domestic news, 41-year-old Jerry Wayne Thomason found a novel way to keep his wife faithful. He clamped a 30-foot dog chain around her neck and kept her in a cage at night. A neighbor realized something was wrong when she saw Patricia Thomason dropping the kids off at school while still wearing the chain. When police arrived, Patricia was standing in her driveway while her husband slept in the passenger seat of his car, still holding on to the leash. He is now facing a host of felony charges, and she's still wondering how 15 years of marriage could go so terribly wrong. "He was cruel," Patricia told San Antonio police, "but sometimes he did rub my belly and give me yummy treats." Asked to comment, women of the community expressed anger and dismay, while their husbands all went, "Hmm." In crime news, women of Los Angeles... little note from the engineer, they're saying friends of his. In crime news, women of Los Angeles, it is safe to take off your hats. The haircut bandit has been apprehended. Michael Howard, a bicycle shop repairman, would approach women at bus stops and park benches and then shear off their hair. 9 victims, aged 12 to 45, got the scalp treatment. When police raided Howard's home, they saw hair everywhere, a thin carpet on the floor, mounds of hair on the bed and in the closet, and neatly organized photographs of severed ponytails. The good news is that Howard confessed and will now spend 8 years in prison. Not only will they shave the hair off his head, but a 300-pound lifer named Bubba will make sure that he's bald at least once a day. Also on the crime front, Vinny the Ching Gigante confessed to authorities this week that for 7 years, he deceived doctors into thinking he was senile so as to avoid prosecution for his mafia activities. Gigante's lawyer tried to make the distinction that his client wasn't feigning mental illness, which would be fraud. He was just fooling his doctors. When the prosecutor pointed out that Vinny would wander around Greenwich Village in his bathrobe, drooling and mumbling to himself, Gigante snapped and said, "If I want to impersonate Anna Nicole Smith, that's my business." in Please Don't Try This at Home news, record-breaking knife thrower Jade Hansen was on the English TV program This Morning, this past Thursday, doing what he does best, hurling knives at his girlfriend and assistant, Yana. Over 1 million viewers watched as Hansen showed how many knives he could hurl around Yana in 60 seconds. Unfortunately, one of the daggers went a little off course and sliced into her head. As the 22-year-old woman clutched the side of her head, the TV host shouted, "Oh my God, there's blood! Get her off!" Meanwhile, any worries Hansen had that his career was in jeopardy were put to rest when Hillary Clinton hired him for Bill's next birthday party. Terrible tragedy in Russia this week when 28 children burned to death in a fire that swept through a school for the deaf. Apparently, no one heard the children's finger snaps for help. In entertainment news, good luck and speedy recovery to Rodney Dangerfield. The 81-year-old comedian underwent brain surgery this week to open up arteries and make way for heart valve surgery he'll be getting in May. Asked if the brain operation would in any way affect his act or his material, Dangerfield said, "I gotta tell ya, I don't get no, ravioli, Rapunzel. Anyway, my mother-in-law, she's so fat, she's, did I mention she's fat?" In movie news, on April 11th, Lionsgate Films released a new horror movie directed by heavy metal star Rob Zombie. The picture is called House of a Thousand Corpses, although outside the U.S. it's known by the alternate title Baghdad Palace. Speaking of creepy things, the government of Haiti has officially sanctioned voodoo as a religion. Practitioners can now legally perform civil ceremonies like marriages and baptisms. A good portion of Haiti's 8 million people have some belief in voodoo, which uses everything from rum to chickens to conjure up spirits that link humans to the divine. Said President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, quote, "Voodoo is an essential part of national identity. Personally, I've never believed in voodoo. Okay, so I did stick those Mexican jumping beans in the Michael J. Fox doll, and I did snap the back of a Superman puppet, but really I'm sure it's just a coincidence." And finally, I want to bid a not very fond farewell to the Concorde airplane. 2003 is to be the last year for these sleek, speedy airbirds, first introduced in January 1976, and then approved to fly in and out of JFK nearly 2 years later. Yes, they were a technological advance, and they cut the flying time from New York to London literally in half. And yes, they were hilariously expensive, anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000 for a first-class round-trip flight. And yet, it was part of that jet-set chic of the late 70s, that glittery, flashy disco era of lights and sound and speed. But what I recall about the Concorde, since I never flew on one myself, was the opposition of people in the community because of noise pollution. I live on the South Shore, not too far from Cedarhurst, which is in the direct flight pattern of Kennedy Airport. So here it was, 1976, and the area is already overrun by airplane after airplane taking off and landing, loud enough so that every 2 minutes you have to turn up the remote just to hear your television set over the drone, and especially in bad weather, flying low enough to rattle the china. So now they wanted to start sending over this residential area supersonic jets, which officials admitted had a harsh to the point of damaging decibel level. Now, all these lawsuits were filed, and people got up in arms not wanting this annoyance, especially for something that 0.0001% of the population would ever get to use. I mean, factories deposit all sorts of crap in the ocean, but at least we all drive their cars, drink their soda, and visit hospitals. Anyway, it took months, but as I said, British Airways and Air France finally got their way. They somehow proved that the environmental damage caused by supersonic noise pollution was somehow less than the damage caused by forcing Elton John to fly Delta. And I do remember all the parents getting really upset about it and worried what would happen if the Concorde flew over just when the kids were having gym outside. The fact that these kids would spend hours blasting Led Zeppelin and Aerosmith on their stereos and headphones was beside the point. This was an outside threat on their health being imposed for corporate reasons on a population that didn't want it. So parents took the loss hard, and so did I, because I was 14 years old and going through a very liberal, almost hippie phase, anti-establishment, anti-authority, in a way that I still carry to this day, balanced with my current needs and fears as a middle-aged, married suburbanite just trying to get by. But back when I was a junior high school kid, I was trying to make a name for myself as a writer and an amusing personality. I was writing all kinds of things for the South Chronicle, the school newspaper. In fact, the following year, I became co-editor, so I was submitting all sorts of stuff, but most proud of the comic pieces and reviews of TV shows and movies and whatever. But I fancied myself a satirist, so I wrote a poem about the whole Concord controversy. Don't worry, I'm not going to read it. I don't even know if I have a copy. I probably do somewhere. I tend to hoard these things. But I remember feeling really proud and thinking, hey, I wrote something clever, and it says something pertinent, and it tells people how I feel about the issue. Aren't I something? I don't remember much of the poem, which I believe was titled Hail to the O Concord, or something in that vein. I don't remember much except that I made a pun on Concord being a supersonic grape, and that the last line was typical of my David versus Goliath approach to just about everything, and how, in the case of the Concord, the Corporagos won and everyone had to suffer the deafening noise of this unwelcome visitor. So the last line was, quote, a little man gets kicked again, which can still be applied to everything, from MTA fare hikes to taxes to the Homeland Securities Act. But hey, we survived the Concord, 25 years of it, and we didn't go deaf completely, and our houses didn't collapse, they just wiggled, and a lot of rich people got where they were going 3 hours faster. I think they call that progress. And that's the Progressive News Gone By for April 13th, 2003. If you want to send me your comments, your opinions, and do that voodoo that you do so well, do it to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. We reserve the right to read your letters on the air, name withheld upon request, and make fun of you endlessly. That's Dave's Gone By, no apostrophe, at aol.com, or snail mail, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Please, no human hair. I'll just wig out. Are you a member of the Rotary Club, the Hadassah, the Elks? Big deal. Why not join something really cool for a change? The Bystanders Club, the official Dave's Gone By fan club. Bystanders get a weekly special email, a bi-monthly newsletter devoted to the show, an autographed membership card eligible for discounts on show merchandise and local businesses, and a one-hour best-of audio tape with gems from the show and maybe even stuff we couldn't put on the radio. It's still just $10 to join for the newsletter, the email, the best-of audio tape. For the cost of 2 porno magazines, and not even good ones, you can show your support for Dave's Gone By. Just make a $10 check or money order payable to Total Theater and send it to Total Theater, Box 62, that's 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also join via PayPal, the email address davesgoneby@aol.com, davesgoneby@aol.com.
We are the youth. We'll take your fascism away. We are the youth.
Dave, what are you doing?
I'm singing your theme song.
My theme song?
The opening number to your show, Joe Salzone Live.
You listen to my show? But you're a knee-jerk left-wing hippie.
Am not. Besides, you're a puritanical right-wing kook.
Maybe true, but I listen to all viewpoints, and I do it every Saturday night at 7:30 on WGBB.
The station that serves your community. We are the youth.
Shut up.
Sorry. La 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 la
Pesach, everyone! Happy Passover, dammit! A most happy and joyous Pesach to you and yours! I'm Rabbi Saul Solomon of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York, and I'm happy to be your Passover guy on this segment of Days Gone By. Last time I was here, we were celebrating Purim, wherein the Jews were saved from extinction by a hot chick and her uncle. This time, the Yehudim were saved from a fate almost worse than death, eternal slavery, by a stuttering little fellow named Moses, his faithful brother Aaron, and a little help from you-know-who. I think we all know the story. After Joseph, the guy with the shmata of many colors, after he did so much good for Egypt, he settled there, and his brothers settled there, and they told two friends, and so on, and so on, and so on, until the Jews make up a significant portion of the population. The new pharaoh was a bit nervous about this, but rather than exile everybody, he figured, hey, free labor, there's no union, no workman's cycle, let's make them slaves. So, the Jews were put to hard labor building the pyramids and the roads and doing touch-up work on the Sphinx. But they were cruelly treated, working from morning till night, gnawing off food, long lines at the bathroom, yet they still found a way to keep multiplying and making more Jews. So, Pharaoh demanded that all male Jews' children be cast into the river. Splash! One of these kids was a little baby whose mama gave him a chance. She put him in a tiny waterproof basket and pushed him into the bulrushes. Why the bulls didn't rush out and trample him, we'll never know. But instead, he was found by Pharaoh's daughter while she was bathing in the stream. She named him Moshe, or Moses, 'cause he moseyed down the stream into her arms. And the queen saved him and raised him as her own, and he became an upstanding member of Egyptian society. He saw a taskmaster brutally whipping a Hebrew slave with a cat of nine tails. Moshe was outraged at the use of a deformed pet to hurt someone, so he slew the Egyptian, and then he ran away. While he was gone, he went wandering and came upon a burning bush. He told Bush to go and beg a rock, he'd feel better. But then he came upon a second burning bush. Burning, but it wouldn't be consumed, for that bush was God, who told Moses to tell Pharaoh to tell the children of Israel they could leave. Moses, who had a bit of a lisp, took his brother Aaron along for support. Ironically, Aaron had also seen a burning bush that morning and tried to consume it, but his wife said, "No, you go with your brother, I'll just use my toy." The two siblings arrived at Pharaoh's palace and were greeted with hatred and derision, which Moses promptly reported back to God. And Hashem said, "This guy doesn't know what he's fooling with. I'm going to give you some magic tricks. Go, do the Copperfield thing. Tell me how it comes off." So, Moshe went back to Pharaoh and changed his stick into a serpent. That's not a metaphor. And some other cool things. But Pharaoh had a guy who could sit buried in an ice block for days. And another conjurer who could hang from his nipples indefinitely, so it wasn't impressed. "That's it," said God. "I gave Pharaoh a chance. Now I'm going to give him 10 chances, each one uglier than the last, and he won't budge for any of them until the last one." And Moses said, "You know, God, you could have saved me a bunch of trips back and forth if you just did the last one first." But God said, "Don't be a smarty tunic, Moses, or you won't see the promised land." So Moshe and Aaron went back to Pharaoh, back and forth to Pharaoh, visiting him 10 horrible plagues upon him. We remember those plagues at the Seder, spilling drops of manischewitz out of our glasses at the misery each affliction must have caused the Egyptian people. The first couple were manageable. Blood, frogs, that was probably kind of cute. Little froggies everywhere, like the shower in the movie Magnolia. Then lice, flies, weird that he does lice first before flies, since lice sounds a lot worse than flies, unless you're Chinese, in which case you used to fly lice. This bad pun was brought to you by the Dave's Gone By Show. It's not the bad pun of the week, because the host Dave Lefkowitz already did that early in the show, but it is the runner-up. And you can sponsor a pun exactly like that. Just call 516-295-1511 for details. What better way to promote your message than to have someone like me shout it at someone like you? So call 516-295-1511 to find out how you can sponsor the bad pun of the week and or its runner-up. Anyway, back to the plagues, which we can imagine were hideous, even though they sound a little odd to modern-day ears, like that cattle disease, murrain, or why the swarm of locusts came after all the hailstorms. I mean, after hailstorms, what would be left to eat? So, to make the concept of the Ten Plagues more immediate, more tangible to the modern listener, I've come up with a different list of pestilences. A new top ten, as it were. It's not meant to replace the originals, Chas v'Chalil, but just a way of getting you to imagine how relentless, how blechy, how terrifying this must have been. So, these are Rabbi Saul's 10 scourges. Number 1, roaches. Icky little disease-carrying bugs. They cause emphysema. They may be responsible for this new SARS virus. You kill one, there's 3 more to take their place. I know my wife. If she were Pharaoh and that were the first plague, forget it! The Jews would be out of Egypt so fast, the matzah would still be dough! Scourge number 2. Paper cuts. Imagine falling naked into a pile of scattered sheets of 20-pound bond paper. And each time you move, you cut yourself. And then every 5 minutes, Hashem pours grapefruit juice on you. Not very nice, huh? Huh? Plague 3. Those little rectangular advertising cards they put in magazines. Every time you open a book, a newspaper, a diary, there's one of those on every page. And even if you shake them all out into a garbage can before you read, it doesn't help, because every other page has those perfume sniff things in it. Every book in your house will stink like the fragrance counter at Macy's. And the only thing worse than that is the stench of your own vomit when you're so nauseous you can't stand it anymore. Scourge number 4. Home Shopping Network. Every single channel on your television dial. I know, we're almost there already, but not one item under $200, and Joan Rivers on every third program, naked. And the only way she'll put her clothes back on is if everybody buys her grotesque jewelry, so everybody does. Plague 5. Intestinal gas. Not just the plus, but the cramping, the bloating. Every single person on the Long Island Railroad, every co-worker on the elevator, letting off enough gas to put Keyspan out of business. And then everybody starves and freezes to death because no one dares light a match. Roaches, cuts, inserts, Jung Rivers and gas. Sounds grisly, huh? But those are just the first 5. With 5 more to go, this is what we in the Torah biz call a cliffhanger. So you're going to have to wait to hear the other 5 until after this important announcement. Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret. These are magical words, conjuring up an oilum of great entertainment. If you want to know everything about what's happening on the stages of New York, you need to get Performing Arts Insider magazine. For 60 years, Performing Arts Insider has been a Bible of the industry, Old Testament only. It tells you when shows are opening and closing, what they're about, who's in them, who wrote them, designers, producers, managers, box office info, everything you need to know about theater, opera, and dance, all the things Jews go to. As the chief rabbi of Melnik once put it, Performing Arts Insider is a godsend, all the facts at your fingertips. For more information, how to subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511 or go to www.totaltheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. We're back! I hope you were paying attention to the ad, because I'll wish a plague on anyone who wasn't. If you just joined us, what the hell were you waiting for? What, were you watching The Simpsons with your finger in your tuchus and you forgot to turn on the radio? Damn it, this is the Dave's Gone By Show, and I'm Rabbi Saul Solomon, celebrating the Passover holiday with you by telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt and the 10 plagues that befell Pharaoh's kingdom. Since the original plagues are a touch old-fashioned, I've come up with a list of alternate plagues, contemporary plagues, so that listeners understand the kind of revenge Hashem deals out when he's mad. The first 5 were cockroaches, paper cuts, unbound rectangular cardboard magazine advertising inserts, home shopping network, and rectal vapor. We continue with scourge number 6. Freezer burn. All your meat, all your ice cream, all your TV dinners, they all taste like someone basted them with nitrogen. And that's before your wife cooks them and makes them taste like she burned them with nitroglycerin. Plague 7. Militant Arabs. Oh, sure, we slew a few in Iraq, and the Israelis are getting tough on Hamas. But imagine walking down the street, and everywhere you look is a kid throwing a rock, a woman wearing a burqa shrieking at you, a man with a grenade in his knapsack, and you don't even live in West Hempstead. Plague number 8. Prostate cancer. What Jew can't relate to prostate cancer? Well, maybe the women, but other than that, a little, forgive me, I'm losing it here a little bit, but a little sack behind your matzo balls and you're screaming in agony halfway to the graveyard. and your proctologist is a former professional wrestler with big, meaty hands, and he wears welding gloves because the rubber ones keep getting torn up by his long, dirty fingernails. The ninth plague, oh, this is a bad one, never-ending dental work. Yes, every other week for years, that little sucky thing in your mouth going, and the Novocaine and the picking at the gum line, and every time he finds another cavity under the filling. I don't care how much God hardened Pharaoh's heart. If he gave the Egyptians never-ending dental work, the Jews would have been shipped across the Red Sea and given free chariot service into Canada if they wanted, just to make it stop. And now, finally, the tenth scourge, that deal-breaker, the one to make every father, mother, brother, and sister weep without end. Everywhere you go, inside, outside, the kitchen, the bathroom, the courtroom, the park, the subway, underwater, on a mountain, everywhere you go. Inspirational music by John Tesh. I know, I know. What merciful God would visit that, even on a hated enemy? But these are plagues, people, not annoyances. Hashem didn't go, I think I'll bother Pharaoh with 10 nuisances. No! He gave the ruler and his people 10 plagues, including death of the firstborn, and the Jews were finally allowed to leave Egypt. They had more adventures to come, but I'm running short on time, so I thought I'd share a little bit of a happier aspect of their holiday. At the Seder, where we eat and drink and retell the story of Pesach, much as I have done now, we also sing songs. Hymns of praise, questioning, and delight. Now, one of the tunes, which comes early in the proceedings, is called Dayenu. It means enough. As in, Hashem has done so many miracles for us. But even if he'd done only a couple, one or two, it would have been enough for undying gratitude. Normally, we sing it in Hebrew with some Aramaic in it, but I've prepared some special English lyrics. So feel free to clap your hands, or sing along, or pick your nose, whatever you want to do. But get into the spirit. This is Dayenu. Oh, even if he had been sleeping while 6 million Jews were slaughtered, even though he watched us tortured, Dayenu, 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 Dayenu. Even if the Muslim putzes weren't blowing up our buses, yada yada, intifada, Dayenu, we're all crazy about you, couldn't live without you, who needs happiness? Even if there was no Hitler, even if there was no Haman, why so many snippy gay men? Dayenu, Dayenu, we are chosen, so we're coping, still we're hoping, you'll choose someone else. Even if we have big noses, even if we're prone to hair loss, even if there was no Tay-Sachs, Dayenu, Dayenu, God is looking, God is watching, God is botching everything he does. Even when the Goyim tease us, even when the gulags freeze us, it's okay, we murdered Jesus, Dayenu, Dayenu, die, die, damn it, die, die, damn it, die, die, damn it, let's sing it one more time, why don't we, die, die, damn it, die, die, damn it, die, die, damn it, and circumcision hurts, oi! Were you singing along? Were you bouncing up and down to the spirit of the holiday? Good! Now go out and make this a wonderful Passover. Have a Seder, or if you're not, find someone who is and invite yourself. Kidnap a child so they can answer the four questions, read the Haggadah, greet Eliyahu, connect to the holiday and to your fellow man. On behalf of myself, my dear wife Miriam Libby, and our children, Nehemiah, Josiah, Shloimi, Chana, Ribki, Yehuda, Moish, Yecheskel, Boruch, Avigdor, Yisrael, Hephzibah, Shaul, Aliza, Shimon, Gedalia, Naftuli, Benyamin, and Fred, by my first marriage, plus one on the way, Baruch Hashem, this is Rabbi Saul Solomon saying Chag Sameach and Shalom Uvracha, from every one of me to every one of you. Hi folks, Dave Lefkowitz here from Dave's Gone By, and I want to tell you about a product, event, or service. I'm going to talk about it for half a minute or a minute, I'm going to make it really interesting, and all my listeners are going to go, hey, maybe I'll try this product, event, or service. It's called advertising, or sponsorship, and it's easy, cost-effective, and just plain effective. To get your person, place, or thing well, not thing, promoted on Dave's Gone By and reach listeners all over Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, and the tri-state area, just give us a call at 516-295-1511 or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, and see sponsorship opportunities, ad rates, and more. Again, the number, 516-295-1511. Insert your product, event, or service here. Do you know what Long Island is doing Friday nights? No, not that. Long Island's Dating, a show for singles by that very singular personality, Bonnie D. Graham. Bonnie talks live with callers and guests about all facets of singlehood, sex, health, relationships, and sex. Bonnie's a comedian and TV host, so whatever your habitational status, check out Long Island's Dating, Friday nights at 6 on WGBB. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's 8:50 p.m. and time for Dave's Gone Cultural, a regular segment we have here that looks at different facets of the art world, or the arts world, I should say, plurally. Most often we deal with theater, but sometimes we do books and movies, and tonight it's television. And before I said farewell to the Concorde, something I wasn't particularly happy to see come and was happy to see go, now I bid farewell, sadly, to Egg, the arts show. It's a TV show, you probably haven't even heard of it, but it's been on PBS and Channel 13 for 3 years now, and grew out of a show that had been on a few years more, City Arts. I think that was on for almost a decade. Now, Egg was a cute title for a show, but also might have worked against it for name recognition of people tuning in to know what it was. Well, what it was segments about dance and sculpture and writers and theater stuff and music stuff, kind of, I don't know, if you cross some of the stuff that they do on CBS Sunday Morning with mini-documentaries, but in a hipper and fresher way than you would expect. It's hard to describe because every show was so different, and you can see samples of all 56 episodes of Egg at PBS's Egg site. Get it? Yes, it's Egg Sighting. Sorry, we've already had two Dave's Gone By puns this week. I didn't want to add another, but there you go. They're archived on the site by genre, literature, theater, music, dance. Now, the website is www.pbs.org/egg, pbs.org/egg. So there are lots of clips and even more text and interviews pertaining to segments on the show. And I asked how long the site would be up now that the show is on its very last episode, and producer Jeff Folesby said the site will be active as long as there is cyberspace, which is comforting, I guess. And the very last Egg is this Friday, April 18th, at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Eastern Time, whatever we are now, and it's called Broadway Workshop, and I'm not even sure if it's going to be repeated. So it's Friday, this Friday at 10, and what it is cameras go behind the scenes for a workshop, a backers audition, of a new Broadway musical called Traps. And this segment is only going to last another minute, but if you're going to watch it and you don't want me to spoil it for you, just turn your radio down for about a minute. And I'll tell everyone else, what's really cool about it is for about 15 minutes of the show, you're totally fooled and you think it's for real. And you think all these problems that they're having and the lousy songs, and because they're close enough to being realistic that you think it's going to be another Urban Cowboy or something, but bad. Not that Urban Cowboy is great, but it's all right. But anyway, and Alan Thicke comes off as like the biggest jerk in the world, when actually he's in on the whole joke. So check it out, the last episode of Egg, this Friday at 10 p.m. And now we're going to move into, my gosh, our final segment here. It's been an eventful program, our 28th episode. And as always, it's gone way too fast. And helping it go, our station manager, Joey, engineer, Paul, my very special guest, Rabbi Saul Solomon, my always loving and supportive wife, Joyce, and all of you listening. Now, don't turn off your radios yet. There's still some more to come, but just getting these out of the way now. And I know I say it every week. It is true that your support of Dave's Gone By, through emails or letters or joining the Bystanders Club or expressing interest in advertising or sponsoring segments of the show, all of it allows me to keep doing what I'm doing, keep doing it better, and keep you amused and entertained. So share your thoughts and suggestions by emailing them to me, davesgoneby@aol.com. No computer? Write it on a matzah or an egg matzah and mail it to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Or send in 10 little itty-bitty dollars, just 10 bucks, and join the Bystanders Club. For more information on that, call 516-295-1511, or for gosh sakes, check out our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. That's also the place to purchase cassettes of previous episodes, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. And if you forget the URL, just Google search Dave's Gone By, and we're right up top. But Dave's Gone By isn't the only show on WGBB. There is a bunch that you should check out, including Joe Salzone Live, Political Talks Saturdays at 7:30, Entertainment Long Island, hosted by Don Lewis, 7 o'clock on Sundays, right before my show. So tune in for Don at 7, and then keep it here from 8 to 9 for Dave's Gone By. Friday nights at 6, it's Long Island's Dating with Bonnie D. Graham. Sunday nights at 10, an hour from now, it's Real Time Radio, a brand new program of very listenable rap, soul, and hip-hop hosted by three very cool guys. And finally, my plug-o-meter is just off the charts this week, give a listen to Midnight Madness and the Big Mouth Brunch, both hosted by Mike Artsis. He's on the station ubiquitously, so make the effort to give his shows a listen. In fact, he would normally probably still be on Sunday nights late, about 10 or 11 o'clock now, except he's a bit under the weather this week, and therefore, once again, you're going to hear my voice on this radio station just a couple of hours from now. I will be in the 11 to midnight slot with, of course, Engineer Paul, and we'll be winging it as we did last time. Last time he convinced me that he had this big plan. He knew exactly what he was going to do for the show, and I bought into it. I said, all right, Paul, it's your gig, you know, you're allowing me the time. Go for it. And then we got on the air, and he says, well, no, I don't have any plans for it. I'm just going to wing it. And it worked. So we're going to work again. And so listen for me again. If you like this show, of course, listen next week to me again at this time, 8 to 9, but also tonight from 11 to midnight. Now, while we have a host of reasons to rejoice, it's good to remember the Haggadah's admonition to also leave room for sadness, for the deaths of our enemies, for those who still don't have freedom, and for those who don't feel free within themselves. After all, as Richard Thompson describes, slavery is a state of mind, and a mind of the state. We're having a little CD queuing thingy. Ah, all those slaves, they just couldn't get it going.
Pharaoh, it sits in his tower of steel. The dogs of money are at his heel. Magicians cry, oh, truth or reason? We're all working for the Pharaoh. A thousand eyes, a thousand ears, he feeds us all, he feeds our fears. Don't stir in your sleep tonight, my dears. We're all working for the Pharaoh. Egypt land, we're all in Egypt land. Tell me, brother, don't you understand? We're all working for the Pharaoh. Hidden from the eye of chance, the men of shadow dance. Stuck into a trance, we're all working for the Pharaoh. I know the rising to the sky, pyramids, so sphinxes lie. Head of dog, Osiris eye, we're all working for the Pharaoh. And it's Egypt land, Egypt land. Brother, don't you understand? We're all working for the Pharaoh.
that's Dave's Gone By for this week, April 13th, 2003. I'll be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. on WGBB AM 1240 and live on the net at WGBB.com. Until then, don't let your days pass over. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Why is this night? And gone by. Never get so old.